All right, so it is 3:30. It is January 12th. This is the Finance and Audit Committee meeting. And I think, Ted, first on the agenda is the phase one park improvements.
Exactly right, Graham. Item number one of two today is the phase one park improvements project closeout. The board is well aware that we've been working with the Park Foundation on the phase one improvements, which included the amphitheater and other amenities in and around the amphitheater for a couple of years now, more than that, if you consider the strategic planning and the master planning and whatnot. But we're getting close to final project closeout, and we thought this would be a good time to bring primarily a financial update to the board on where we are on not only the construction contract that we managed to construct the facilities, but also the O&M agreement and our depreciation fund. So Mike McKernan is going to take the lead and walk us through an update on where we are with all of that. Michael?
Yeah, let me work on a share here and then we'll get started. I think I did that wrong. Hold on. You seeing a PowerPoint lead sheet?
We are.
Fantastic. Thank you, Ted. Yeah, I've got five or six slides here. You accepted a contract here back in August, but there's really been some more work that's been done, and there's some important things to accentuate and some things to inform you upon. Again, I think the theme here today will be this big project has been about a partnership between Des Moines Water Works and the Park Foundation, as well as others. And so we're ironing out some of the final details of trying to remain good partners here. So let me dive right in here. Again, just a little bit of a trail, if you will. This master planning, there was even, discussions even before 2014, but, a pivot point for this entire thing goes back, 6-7 years. I mentioned that while this is funded by private money and the Park Foundation volunteer board, it doesn't launch without collaboration, partnership with Des Moines Water Works as utility, as well as the City of Des Moines. A number of agreements that all of you have been, or most of you have been a part of, operational agreements, a couple key 2080 agreements. I am going to thank you and others for getting those created. Those were of great guidance through this construction period. And they continue to, inform our path forward. We are going to exercise some judgment here that we need to share with you today. But again, those themes and the sturdiness of those agreements were powerful. Again, we accepted the Henkel contract in August. And it was a $7.1 million construction contract, but if you look at broader costs and design costs and the whole improvement that includes the Great Lawn, the amphitheater, the walkways, the art, the connector, you toss in that connector, you're talking about $12 million worth of improvements to the southeast part of the park. Clearly an addition to Des Moines. The project was far enough along in the middle part of 2019 where some events were actually conducted, and you can kind of get a sense of what that addition to Des Moines looked like and felt like, and it was very positive. Unfortunately, the pandemic rolls in quarter one of 2020, and that has created some things here that are that we'll cover today as well. So that's kind of the broad trail. There's three things I want to talk about today that we've been kind of working on since you officially accepted that Henkel contract. Construction administration costs and pump station costs on the actual improvements to the north of the building here. The foundation has expressed some concerns about that, and we're working with them to negotiate, an endpoint. We also want to talk about the O&M agreement and the an approach here on how to move forward with having the foundation pay at an at-cost rate. Again, a few more details forthcoming here. And then, as Ted mentioned, we want to give you an update on the depreciation fund and our perspective on that at this point. So we'll hit the construction management pump station costs first. The spirit intent of these 20 ADs worked really well. We have always had enough money on hand to pay the contractors and pay our own costs. And we have got to a point here at the end where we are just reflecting back on that and asking ourselves some questions based upon some concerns that the foundation has pushed forward. And again, Waterworks staff are simply protecting ratepayer dollars, and Park Foundation board members are certainly trying to look out for the interest of donor dollars. And so we've got these two items here that we think there's room to negotiate a little bit. These two issues in total, I would estimate them to be between $75,000 and $100,000. So we're really wrestling with the kind of the last 1%, or maybe even less than 1%, depending on how you do the math. We certainly feel like the administration costs that we charged, you know, they primarily meant the spirit and intent of the 2080 agreement. At the same time, there's a little bit of room in there to look at things a little bit differently. And so we didn't want to be completely rigid and cold in regard to hearing that from the foundation. We also had a pump station that our staff got involved in at the end to construct, and our estimate on that and the actual costs were unfortunately further apart than we would desire. That's something that we need to look for the right word here, but I want to say take responsibility for that a little bit. And so when we kind of put all that together, we think it's appropriate to issue the Park Foundation a credit of about $60,000. And this is an item I want to say that if you look in your memo, if you're reading the memo closely, you're going to say, well, Mike's got the numbers mixed up. The numbers in the memo say a $53,000 credit. That was a mistake. The number that we intend to give credit to the foundation is $60,000 in regard to these items. So, you know, total labor on this project is in excess of $300,000, probably closer to $350,000. And again, after some evaluation of these things, we're moving forward with a $60,000 credit to the foundation. Got to be candid here. There's a little bit of, they're appreciative of this credit. They still feel like, in part, some folks on the foundation probably feel like more should be done here. So until we get more compelling information, this is kind of our final offer. And so I think we'll get them there. And if there's any substantial difference there, we'll certainly communicate it, but envision a $60,000 credit to the foundation for these items.
Mike, will you explain the pump station and why this, what the relationship with the foundation and why they're involved in this project?
The pump station is part of the improvements, Graham. It was not envisioned originally. There was a thought that at the design stage that the grounds would naturally drain. And what we found is we don't believe the grounds are naturally draining. So we've created this kind of wet spot that kind of encircles the Great Lawn, or about two-thirds of the Great Lawn. If you come out here after a good rainstorm, you'll see ponding water. And so our motivation to the foundation was, well, that needs to be corrected. And the contractor had provided a change order amount to deploy a design. It was costly. We felt like we could do it for significantly less by installing something that was skinnier and smaller. And Graham, we've kind of fumbled executing that. There's no other way to say it. As we got started with constructing this small pump station, we made some incremental improvements. We didn't think they would be significant. Now they turned out to be significant. So our initial estimate was probably low, but we changed the location of the ball. We put in some different pumping systems. We increased some drainage. Those are things that we did not, from the engineering department perspective, we didn't handle those in a way that we would want to repeat necessarily.
That's fine. Yeah, that's fine. Sue, does that answer your question about what this project was and how it was initiated?
Yeah, thanks. Usually when we're talking about pumping stations, it's for water distribution. So I assumed it was tied to the park. Thanks.
I gave you quite a bit in response to that. Yeah, there's some ponding water on the north and west side of the Great Lawn that we need to get rid of so we can maintain the grass. So that's what it was for. Anything else before we bump to the next slide? Okay. Again, the kind of switching gears now from the capital improvement to the operating agreement. Again, the spirit and theme here is that the O&M costs here are, you know, the ratepayers should be shielded from that. And so this has, again, been a very valuable document for members of engineering, finance, and grounds to, again, give direction and deploy a scheme and a methodology for billing the Park Foundation for operations and maintenance expenses out there. Now, the thing you need to know about the 2080 for the O&M is that it was written with the understanding that the Park Foundation would be able to conduct events and have concerts and, you know, raise money. The nature of the 28E also is a little unique, but I think the key thing that, and it took, this is very simple, but it even took some of us inside the walls here a little while to get comfortable with this. But if we just rigidly followed the 28E, we would be putting the Park Foundation in a position where we're actually overcharging them for O&M. And in being in the midst of a brand new project and a pandemic, we don't think that is appropriate to overcharge them and then try and let it correct over the course of a decade. We want to move forward here with just charging them at cost. We would do that at least through June of 2021. And then, you know, we would revisit. And I think at the point of revisit, in the middle of 2021, there will be two clear paths at a minimum. One is we could continue with the at-cost approach. It wouldn't seem to harm anyone. And then secondly, we could we could go back to the just the language in the agreement. And we may even want to change it if we like the at-cost approach. We may want to formalize that in a modification to the 2080. But
so what you're suggesting here is not a change to the 2080, but basically a handshake agreement that, you know, we wouldn't charge them the same amount right now until we kind of get back to the pandemic and events start happening at the
correct
at the park. And then at a later date, we could decide whether we wanted to change the agreement or not. Am I hearing you correctly?
That's what I am placing on the table, is that let's just make it a handshake until at least June. And then if we think we need a permanent change in June, then maybe it's time to alter that. And I think we'll be more informed by then, or we'll know that we need to, you know, maybe we need to push it off another 3 months or another year. I'm not sure.
Right. And I like that approach, Mike, because I mean, we were in the test period, if you will, before the pandemic. I mean, part of the reason we wrote the 2080 the way it was because we didn't know what how this was going to work. And so we wanted the language to make sure that our ratepayers weren't, you know, paying for things that were outside of Des Moines Water Works' mission. And I think it did that. But we also, I think we discussed at the time, and Ted, you probably remember, I mean, we discussed at the time that we were kind of making this stuff up. and that we might revisit the agreement at some time. So I like this approach, Mike, that, you know, we understand where we are and we can, you know, make this temporary adjustment and then, you know, agree to revisit this once we get some data.
And you're absolutely right, Graham. We even put a provision in the 2080 that said it would be adjusted annually, but we don't have a good year of data yet to use as the basis. So we're just saying, let's charge them our costs and no more than that. Our ratepayers are protected. It just doesn't feel right to continue to charge them that much higher amount when they're not having events and we don't have any cost.
Okay. Last thing to cover today is just another
I want to say something on that, and that is, and I'm fine with doing that. I would just like there to be a good record of it, because I know that sometimes we get into interpretation issues and people saying, oh, well, you've been doing that for that way for a long time, so that must be what you think it means. So if we have a good understanding of what we're doing at this time, you're saying that it is not in accordance with the 2080. And like I said, I'm fine with what you're talking about, but I would like it. I would like to have some kind of written track of what it is that we're doing.
Diane, do you think that written track could be in the form of a letter from Ted to the foundation, basically when he transmits the invoice, for lack of a better word, for the payment of these fees, and just he says, you know, for these reasons, we're billing you this amount this time. This is lower than what is dictated by the 2080, and we expect to, you know,
follow
the 2080 in the future.
Just so there's some kind of record of it, and
so the letter from Ted might
I think that would do it. We could even call it forbearance from enforcing that part of it due to the pandemic. And
I like it.
We'll take it.
With boards changing like they do, we don't want to get into another Zoom situation.
Understood. I think we've got some good content here, and I think I know a person or two that might be able to craft that letter for Ted's signature. How does that sound?
That sounds great.
Okay. Maybe a part of that letter can also include some discussion on the depreciation fund. Again, the 2080 is, you know, I'm going to use the word pleasure. You know, I came to this project kind of in the middle of the middle of the beginning, if you will. And so these 2080s have been great, again, support and guidance. It's obvious that quite a bit of thought went into trying to get the right content in there for the right reasons. And there's a element of the operation and maintenance 2080 that talks about establishing a depreciation fund. And it starts with a fairly significant payment in the year of construction, 2020. It's in excess of $500,000. And then there's some annual payments that follow. Again, they're based upon some accounting principles, and I won't dive too deep into that, but there's some annual payments that follow. The foundation has been unable to start this fund. They've got a small fund. It's not specifically this depreciation fund. They've got an endowment fund with maybe $50,000 in it. So we are communicating with them that you haven't met this obligation, and our reaction to that presently is to, you know, not overreact. We understand that brand new facility, and they really haven't been able to turn the lights on and do an event for approaching a year now. And so we think the best path forward here is patience and monitor this. We don't have a specific need to use capital improvement monies to go out and rebuild or rejuvenate a part of the improvements. It's too early for that. But we do have an expectation that the foundation will, in due time, get this fund established and make sure it's funded properly. And so, again, we want you know, some broad awareness on these three things today. patience on the depreciation fund, some reasonableness in regard to the foundation on the O&M costs, going at an at-cost approach here through June. And then again, the first item we discussed, the some of the administration and some of the pump station costs, we think a $60,000 credit there is on the mark. So I felt like I hustled through that pretty quick, but questions, comments?
All I would like to add on that depreciation fund is I feel very strongly that that needs to be fully funded. This was something I think the board felt strongly about when we approved the project to begin with. I understand some of the difficulties that they've encountered at this point, but as they begin to schedule concerts, they begin to raise money once we're through this pandemic, I would like to see something in writing from them about how exactly they're going to start fulfilling this commitment. Whether it's all proceeds from concerts or what have you until the bucket is full. But this is one that I'm not real interested in kicking down the road very far. And if somebody disagrees with me, chime in. But I think this is one that we have to hold pretty firm to.
Yeah. Well, the question I have is, does this need to go to the board meeting and take a vote on it? We're talking about not about, again, some kind of forbearance on 28E provisions. I don't know how we do that in a committee meeting. And I agree with you, Graham. And I think that, again, once we do this, and if we do it at the board, I think a letter from Ted, I would agree that the piece on depreciation, when they're able to generate revenue and have a normal year. I mean, so much of this is because of the pandemic.
You know, I agree with that approach, Diane. And Ted, why don't you give that a little thought about how you're going to bring this to the board meeting? It would be appropriate, because I don't think Andrea is on this call today. She is one of our representatives on that board too. And so she can be present at the board meeting and think about what that, that motion would read, how we would, grant the forbearance, some thought to your letter. And I don't necessarily think we have to have the letter, a return letter from the foundation in hand at our meeting, but that we would pursue some sort of record from them about how they're going to meet the depreciation clause.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll work with Rick on that a little bit and bring something to the board for consideration, and then we'll communicate that to the foundation as well and get it documented what the plan is.
Yeah, I mean, both what Diane and Sue said are very important. I mean, boards change, times change, and I think it's especially at this kind of critical juncture as the foundation goes into kind of its second phase, both building phase, but also from a board governance, their board has changed over. It's really important for us to document this. So good points by everybody on that. Any other questions or thoughts on item number one?
No, but Mike, thank you for being so thoughtful and bringing this forward in a way that we protect our ratepayers, but also support the foundation.
Agreed.
You're welcome. Again, those 2080s have been valuable, and they've been a great guide. And we'll make the proper documentation here and come up with a communication effort here. So thank you.
All right, hearing no other comments or questions on item number one, we'll move on to number two. Ted, I will hand this over to you.
Thanks, Graham. Item number two is an opportunity for staff to share with the board information that we received at the most recent microgroup meeting, the regional microgroup. We had a presentation from Matt Stoffel with PFM Financial related to growth pays for growth and what it would mean in terms of dollars per year or dollars per customer kind of consideration if we were to consider the type of benefit pays for benefit proposal that's on the table. I think it's important that the board understand this isn't anything we've agreed to, or this isn't the plan. This is just some analysis that Matt did to give us a sense of what kind of dollars we're talking about, and thought it would be a value for the board to hear and see and be able to ask questions as we work through the discussion, but certainly not something we've agreed to do at this point. Amy is going to walk us through that, and then there'll be opportunity for questions.
All right. As Ted said, the growth versus benefit discussion, as we've met as a micro group and also, frankly, the many meetings prior to that, has been a pretty significant consideration in the discussions. And we, of course, have understood from FCS in the past, or they have advised us, look, this is a very sensitive lever. So tread very carefully as you, you know, continue down the path of trying to form a regional utility. So one of the things I think that we have heard along the way is what does, I mean, growth versus growth for growth seems to make sense, but what does benefit pays for benefit even mean, really? And so Matt Stoffel, as Ted said, with PFM, put forth his view, and that's why I've called this one view of the financial impacts. It's not even necessarily our view, but it may be. And Matt Stoffel, just so you're aware, the WRA has been a model that we are frequently, we frequently talk about as a potential model for regionalization of a water utility. And he has been a key advisor to the WRA for many years. So that's kind of his involvement. And so this is, I'll start here with the FCS model. And this is really just to provide background and context. You know, we've talked a lot about growth pays for growth. The FCS model, the term sheet that we put forth, suggested that where capital expansions are necessary, that those communities who are growing should pay for the growth because they are the ones requiring the additional capacity. One thing that I think gets lost in a lot of the conversations, if we look at the FCS model, all communities anticipate growth in coming years over the next 20, 30 years. It's not just the Ankeny's and the Waukees. Des Moines, in fact, is projecting growth. And if we dive a little bit deeper into the growth, and I'm not going to talk a lot about numbers, but I thought that this might be a good baseline for you to refamiliarize the discussion. The FCS model, based on the long-range plan that we provided to FCS and that we developed several years ago, shows that the maximum daily demand for the region will grow by about 12 MGD for the period 2020 to 2025, so in this next five-year CIP. And Des Moines' growth is projected at just under 1 MGD, at 0.8 MGD, which compared to the entire region is 7% of the region's growth. So we will be responsible as Des Moines for about 7% of that growth. And so the FCS model says, well, Des Moines Water Works then would make sense that Des Moines Water Works would participate in 7% of any expansion costs for this time period. Just for reference, some of the other communities I've noted here, what their growth would be and what their percentage would be. No surprise, Ankeny is at the top. They would be about 18% of the growth in the next 5 years. West Des Moines would just be under that at 14%. Urbandale is projecting 10% of the region. And then we come in that fourth one with Altoona, Grimes, and Xenia, with each of us right around 7%. So we are, you know, arguably in the top four growth communities in the region over the next 5 years. And again, I say that because depending on who we speak to or who we, you know, have conversations about, I don't think that that's always fully understood that we are a growth community. So the alternative that has been put forth since these discussions began, frankly, is that benefit pays for benefit. And philosophically, I think the argument has been made, can be made, that all participating communities, those that are even not growing, benefit from capital expansions and should share in the capital costs. And what's driving that philosophical argument is when there are expansions, there is improved technology being used, that would benefit all participants. There's a redundancy of systems that shouldn't be overlooked. Everyone benefits from that. And so that's kind of where this benefit pays for benefit philosophy kind of sprouts with those assumptions. And so, as I said, he prepared an analysis, Matt, that would show the financial impacts of all communities, growth and non-growth, shared in the capital costs of expansion. A couple key assumptions here. The regional total capital costs for this five-year period are projected to be $209 million. That's total capital costs. The annual debt service for that would be about $15 million. But not all of those $209 million is related to expansion. And when we dive a little deeper into our long-range plan or our capital five-year CIP, we found that about 57% of those expansion costs, or of those capital costs rather, are related to expansion. And so it would be 57% of the 15.3, which the debt service then, the capital that we're talking about each year, would be about $8.7 million per year. So this analysis looks at how that $8.7 million should be allocated among the regional members every year. The proposed methodology for benefit, again, based on Matt's presentation, was that there would be different blended scenarios could be proposed to allocate the expansion costs. And it would be some version of what I have there in the blue, the pro rata share of growth plus some pro rata share of demand. And so to bring that home a little bit more, some examples for Des Moines would be 95% of our growth percentage, which is 7%, or our growth share, plus the remaining 5% could be allocated on average day demand, which we are 35% of the region's average day demand. And so we could have a blended calculation here, 95-5. The vast majority in these examples is of course targeted to growth. And you could keep tweaking those. Of course, 95 could go to 90 times the 7% that Des Moines has a share of for growth, leaving the 10% based on average day demand. And so he provided different calculations and scenarios, what if calculations, based on that approach. And so this chart really just encapsulates a summary of the Des Moines impact. If we stuck with, if the region were formed under the terms that growth pays for growth and everything is as it was presented in the FCS model, then given the assumptions that we just talked about based on the level of capital and so forth, Des Moines customers would pay $623,000 for those expansion projects. If we start to tweak that a little bit to go towards this benefit for benefit, the rest of that chart shows if it's 95% growth and 5% average day, we're increasing about $120,000 for every 5% that we attribute to average day. Okay, so we kind of have our stick in the sand at that 623 that was presented in the term sheet, or that would be an outcome of what was presented in the term sheet. And each 5% that we give on average day, it's increasing our incremental costs incrementally by about $120,000. If we went to 90-10, Des Moines customers would pay $865 versus the $623. So, you know, what we can tell by these numbers is that for every 5% allocated to average day demand, Des Moines' annual costs increase about $120,000. To put that to a customer level, we have about 73,000 customers in Des Moines. So that's about $1.64 per year, or about 0.5% of our total budget. Of course, we also at the regional table need to be watching out for our total service customers, because we'll be representing them at the table. and they have a similar outcome, less than $2 per customer for every 5% that we release that lever a little bit. One other thing that I will mention is that these scenarios talked about releasing the lever and going towards average day demand. The argument could also be made that that lever should be released a little and go to max day demand or maximum day. In fact, that argument is pretty strong in my view. Matt prepared these numbers because they were worst case scenario for Des Moines. So this would be the worst case scenario for Des Moines customers. If maximum day were selected, it would be more favorable results for Des Moines customers. I thought you might be interested in the overall look just to see, you know, how these results shake out. I'm not going to talk obviously about all these numbers, but what I think is interesting is you can see the red text, and those are the communities that would benefit from a benefit pays for benefit approach, at least to some degree. And then the communities that are in black, of course, Des Moines customers being one, and frankly, many of our total service customers, they would see their costs slightly increase. And one of the things that, you know, we found pretty notable was, you know, Des Moines is impacted by about $1.64 per customer per year. I won't make any judgments as to whether that's a lot or a little, but if you look at a community like West Des Moines, the benefit to them also is not great. So going to a benefit, pays for benefit approach for some of these other customers doesn't give them a real strong advantage either. And frankly, personally, those results surprised me a little, I'll be honest. So it was good to see that. I think the community most positively affected would be Ankeny, of course, just because they're one of the fastest growing. So what do we do with this information? We have asked FCS to provide a model that allows us to, you know, fairly easily see the financial impacts of moving different levers as we continue our quarter one discussions. And, you know, that's something that is already in place. We've already asked FCS. They're already starting to work on that. So I think when we receive that information, we really need to reconcile the results of this study with what we're seeing from the FCS model. Because again, I was a little surprised that the results, the calculations were not as sensitive as I thought that they could be. And, you know, as we've talked for benefit, pays for benefit, and as FCS has said, be very careful there. I still think that's, you know, very sound advice. But it could be that the thought was, you know, that there could be pressure to go to a much higher percentage of average day or max day, not these scenarios, which are assuming 5, 10, 15, and 20% of average day. And then I think that the philosophical approach to funding growth, and really it comes down to this, maybe even more than the numbers, will need to be considered by the board in context of the full regional package. As we reconcile this information with what we'll be receiving from FCS, it becomes more of a philosophical debate, perhaps more than anything. So I went through those numbers very quickly, the slides. Any questions or comments? We have four of us on here that can try to answer those based on our discussions with Matt.
Amy, I was glad to see the, Ted and I have discussed the limited benefit to communities like West Des Moines and others, you know, if we did have, say, a 5% allocation, as you have shown here, you know, we're talking a couple grand. So certainly it's not going to sweeten the pot that much for a lot of these communities. So I'm curious about like the administrative challenges and cost of having some kind of mixed, you know, benefit place for benefit model. I mean, can we sell it as it's just going to be a lot easier to just have growth pays for growth? Is it much more challenging, do you think, if to operate under some kind of hybrid system like this? And maybe the administrative, you know, work is the same either way. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think the administrative work would be, in terms of the actual work itself, complex to set it up. I mean, we have all of the inputs. You know, we already track average day. We track maximum day. We're using, of course, the cost would be known. So I wouldn't want that to be the reason, or it's to me not a significant reason to not do this. It would be more of a philosophical approach or a philosophical difference than the administration.
That makes sense. Thank you.
Yeah.
Amy, would you talk for a minute? You mentioned that this is one approach and that paying a percentage of average day demand was one approach, but you could also do maximum demand and that percentage. Can you talk a little bit? I'm trying to get my head wrapped around what that would mean in managing peak and incentives that would be out there. Did you say that because it's peaking that drives capital expansion?
Right. That's why I said that. And I think that's why the case could be made for using peak demand, because obviously the more that your average and peak are closer, the more efficient the system is. And the max day would be more beneficial to Des Moines because we are a lower percentage of the max day than we are the average day, because we don't peak as much as the other communities. So these same numbers, I mean, Matt did not run the numbers, but I could even, take his calculations and run similar information based on max day as an example. And it will be more favorable to Des Moines and probably several of the other communities in black here, and less favorable than these high peaking communities.
But I think we appreciated about seeing these numbers is we weren't sure what the delta would be between growth pace for growth. And when we saw over an entire year, it was 120,000, I guess it gave me a sense of relief that we weren't talking about the dramatic impact like Jason had warned us about when we start to change that lever at all. So we were very excited to bring this forward to the board.
Yeah, I think it's a perspective to keep in mind. One thing it's probably a good reminder that this is only the first 5 years of expansion. So the next 5 years, 2026 to 2030, there would be more expansion presumably needed. So those costs would begin to stack on the $1.64. And so over time, as expansions occur, of course, the debt service costs just keep stacking on. And so over time, there's more than the $1.64 per customer per year cost as the system continues to expand. This just really looks at the first 5 years. But it did give us good perspective, I think.
Amy, would you expect that each five-year increment would be a comparable amount per customer per year?
I think it depends on the expansion costs. You know, if there are comparable expansion costs in the CIP for each of those 5 years, I wouldn't anticipate that these results would change a lot, because I think the behaviors are not going to change a lot. Between average and peak, but the costs, if you have higher costs and greater debt service or lower debt service, that will certainly impact.
One of the things I still need to reconcile for myself is Jason's perspective that growth was the most sensitive lever, and we need to be very careful of that. And these numbers, which appear to be relatively small, $2 per customer per year. So we have asked Jason to do some work on that, and we'll be getting more information, but we did want to share this analysis with the board. We want to try to share information on an ongoing basis, so we're not faced with trying to share so much all at once, either monthly or at the end of the discussion.
Another thing that came up as a result of this, I think it's important because so often we think about all these other communities growing and that's where the growth is. But these were numbers that we had a chance to go back and actually update. And Des Moines felt very comfortable with this number of 7%. So we will have growth. But the other thing in that discussion that came about with the micro group was, I think, and Ted and Diane, tell me if you agree or disagree, I thought there was general consensus around how important it is for each community to plan for their growth. And should they not bring forward the right amount, there would be, I'm going to say, a penalty or some kind of reconciliation to those communities that would not have planned for it so the regional entity could make plans for that expansion. And I thought that was a good step forward.
Yeah, I agree. I think everyone understands that if someone uses more than they planned for, they're going to have to pay more. And call it a penalty or call it fairness, I guess, but they're going to have to pay their share.
Well, you know, how many times have we talked as a board about how some communities, Amy, you know where I'm going with this, call it a penalty when they exceed the purchase capacity. And why? How can you charge us that penalty? We're buying more. But once they are part of that regional planning and they understand the importance of it, it was interesting how it kind of shifted. So that and some other kind of aha moments, I think, are starting to resonate, is how I'm feeling about it.
So Joel, your question and comment has me thinking your question was more geared toward the administrative piece of doing this. And does this make it more difficult from an administrative piece? And I think that's a fair question. I think the other question of that, and maybe it's more philosophical, but does this complicate understanding of this agreement, both from, you know, as boards change and governance changes, and from a customer perspective? And I think that is something that we have to consider. And I guess related to that, and I'll be interested as we discuss this further and hear from people like Jason Mohm and others about their stand on this. I think as we try to craft this regional document, we're trying to anticipate a whole bunch of unknowns. And that's what I really think about when I think about growth is, you know, that unknown. And forgive me for using the same old example every time, but some community recruits some sort of heavy user of water, frankly, a wasteful user of water, and maybe a user of water that none of these other communities want. But this particular community recruits this user and wants it in their community. There could be a lot of dissatisfaction from other communities that they have to share for the payment of this type of growth that they don't feel is healthy for their community. And that type of growth should be paid entirely by others. And, you know, I realize that example is probably outlandish, but I think it's one that we should consider because we don't know all of the reasons for growth. And so it's not possible for us to plot out the next 5 or 10 years necessarily and what type of growth will happen because there are possibilities for things like that.
I think that's right. I mean, it demonstrates the difficulty in doing this. You know, people talk about the known unknowns and the unknown, or how's that go backwards, whatever. But, you know, you really are dealing with a snapshot in time and trying to do projections. And as we all know, things don't turn out as you have planned, but that doesn't mean you don't try to do the best job that you can do and run some scenarios for those kinds of things. You know, big users, call them wasteful, whatever. How does that impact things? And and see what it does to numbers and do the best you can with it.
I think this question will be one of the last sitting on the table at the end. And I think, honestly, it will come down to these kind of philosophical perspectives. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important that the board understand the true financial impact of these questions, so they have a basis upon which they can stand or come off of their philosophical position a little bit or not. Mm-hmm. And I hope this was helpful and informative. We'll certainly give you more information as we get it, but this does seem to be important piece for some of the other participants, but we'll see where we end up.
Well, I appreciate, let me, go ahead, oh, I'm sorry, go ahead, Joel. No, go ahead, Joel, please.
Sure. That kind of, Ted, addresses my question. I'm just kind of curious to peek into the room and what the other communities think about these numbers. I mean, particularly, you know, was West Des Moines surprised, or did it change their outlook at all? The thought that they would only save a couple grand a year at 5% growth. What's the reaction to these numbers and the notion that maybe this lever isn't as sensitive as we thought, and that with kind of a nominal amount, it really isn't moving that much money around?
I think it's probably about as you would anticipate, Joel. You know, our perspective, as stated in the meeting, was, well, it's not that big a deal, West Des Moines. Why do you care? Why do you need us to give on this? And their perspective was, well, it's not that big of a deal, Des Moines. It's, you know, a buck a customer. Why can't you, you know, throw us a bone, kind of a thing.
It gets pretty circular, I'm sure.
Yeah. I reserve judgment on the whole thing until we have a chance to run this through Jason's model and make sure that it's not more sensitive to this than this in the long term.
But Ted, I want to make sure that the board knows that this is not just a West Des Moines Urbandale request of us.
No.
I've heard this directly from Clive, from Johnston, from
Ankeny.
Yeah, I mean, Ankeny for sure. So I don't want anyone to go away thinking this is West Des Moines saying you've got to do this. I've heard it louder, quite frankly, from the other customers. That's just my take on the meetings I've been in on.
No, I think it's understandable. I mean, especially from an Ankeny, I mean, they would definitely want people to pay for their growth. And so that doesn't necessarily mean that we should. But, you know, I do, Ted, appreciate this analysis and this kind of look at it. I've stated, you know, my skepticism about the unknowns, and I'm going to continue to think about that. Like you, Ted, this presentation doesn't convince me to do anything, except I look forward to I look forward to the next piece of information.
Yeah, understood. But it is our stated intention here to try to bring this along in smaller bites and have these discussions and keep everybody informed and up to date. So hopefully we are able to accomplish that today. Thank you, Amy.
Ted and Amy, I think if you could make the offer to Andrea, who is unable to be here at some point, and maybe you can combine it with other information that we get down the road, but I'd like for her to have the opportunity to kind of wade through these numbers too. So
absolutely agreed, Graham. And Andrea even called me when she was going to let me know she couldn't be here and asked if we could share Amy's slides, which we've done.
Great.
And offered the opportunity to walk through them with her at any time. So we will
Perfect.
Certainly try to keep her on pace with the rest of the group.
As usual, you're ahead of me. Sue, awesome. Were you about to say something?
Just wanted to say I really appreciate Amy. We had a lot more information than this. I really appreciate Amy taking it and deciphering it down. I think we all know she teaches, what, at a community college, Amy? Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's the teacher ability in her that comes out when she, it's nice to see it a second time and to have it kind of, you know, sifted down to this. So thank you, Amy, for taking that and making a very logical presentation and a few number of slides.
My pleasure.
Anything else on this item? Item number two. We will go then to Ted's, to the CEO comments and discussion.
A couple of things for you, Graham, or for the group. Annual updates, I always find it fascinating to see where we landed on a couple of our important statistics. Main breaks, first of all, Jenny told me our 10-year average for main breaks was 240 annually over the last several years. In 2020, we finished with 242. So two above average, or two above the recent average, which was a number of breaks fewer than we had budgeted. So we finished the year well within budget on main breaks in 2020, which is positive. We always budget a little above that average to make sure we cover the above average years. Year to date though, here at the 12th of January, we've already had 21. So we're starting the year with a little bit of a flurry, but that's not uncommon this time of year. So it's the main break perspective. Pumpage for the year is another interesting statistic. You know, we typically budget about 17 billion gallons of water production, customer demand. We finished the year 2020 at 18.5 billion gallons, which is a record, actually, the highest year ever. 2012 has for many years been our highest year, but we finished the year just above the 2012 total, 18.5 billion. Our minimum day this year was 37.3 million, which is the highest minimum day that we have ever had. Our average day was 50.6 million, which is also a record. It's the highest average day. But interestingly, our maximum day at 85.2 million, still 10 million gallons lower than our historic maximum day. So our minimum was a record high, our average was a record high, our total was a record high, and our maximum was nowhere near a record high, which is good. We like to spread the demand out. It makes it so much easier for the production folks to meet those demands. And the last thing I will share is just a tidbit I got from Amy about our implementation of the CIS project. You're all aware we had a lot of calls and a lot of questions from customers and a lot of phone traffic. That situation is improving steadily as we go. They're working through the questions and concerns with customers. We're still having longer than average wait times, or longer than normal, in the 10 to 15 minute range, frankly, which is very long for us on a normal day, but shorter than it was just a couple of weeks ago, and even shorter than it was a month ago. Our normal is more around 2 minutes of hold time. So we're making progress there. The system is stabilizing, as I heard Amy say early on in the meeting, but still working on it and still getting a number of calls. But Graham, that's it for me, unless there are questions.
Any questions for Ted? Thank you, Ted. Just for everyone else, and a follow-up about next steps when it comes to committee. At this next committee meeting, Joel will likely be the chair of this committee. I will put together in the item for our board meeting that talks about committee chairs and that sort of thing, some of the things I've discussed with each of you about looking at the charters and some of that governance issue. And so look for that at the January board meeting. Anything else for the good of the cause? All right. Hearing that, I think we'll be adjourned. Thank you, everybody, for your time.
Thank you.
Thanks all.
Night.